political scene around about us today, the election that's going on, certainly been interesting. It's been unlike anyone that I remember in my lifetime, probably unlike any that have ever been. And we're not going to talk about politics today, but just to kind of introduce what we are talking about, I want you to think for just a moment of the two primary candidates. And think of Hillary Clinton. And what's about the top four or five words that come to your mind whenever you think of Hillary Clinton? And then kind of turn that around and think of Donald Trump. What are the top four or five words that immediately come to mind when you think of Donald Trump? And probably all of our lists that we might come up with in our mind might be just a little bit different. But I would venture to guess that one word that did not come up, probably in any of your list, is the word integrity. Integrity. It's something that it seems we've moved away from as a society. It's a trait that used to be very important for people like political leaders. But it's become very evident to me, at least, throughout this campaign that we as a society aren't very concerned about integrity. Probably if we were, some different choices might have been made. The story is told of a major general back in the Korean War, William F. Dean. He was taken, he was placed in a North Korean prison camp. He was tortured there and went through horrible things. And one of the things they did one day, they came in and they told him they were going to take him out and shoot him. And they gave him just a few moments, they said, to write a letter to his wife that they would mail to her. And then they were going to take him out and shoot him. It was just a scare tactic. They really had no intention of carrying that out. Just another way of torturing him as they went through their process. But as he sat down and he quickly composed a letter to his wife, you can imagine that the things that were important, the things that mattered the most, were the things that were written in the letter. But he had a son at home, a young son, and he just wrote one sentence to his son. And he said, "Tell Bill the word is integrity." The one word that, given the chance as a father, that he wanted to leave with his son was the word integrity. Now, there's several important words that we might have wanted to say in that instance. But integrity is certainly important. Proverbs 11, verse 3, "The integrity of the upright will guide them, but the perversity of the unfaithful will destroy them." Now, you might recognize that from our talk on Sunday evenings. We introduced the wisdom literature a few weeks ago as an antithetical parallelism. A parallelism where you have a sentence and then the opposite of it being stated. You have the integrity and then you have the perversity, or other translations translate that crookedness or falseness of the unfaithful. So the integrity of the upright, the unfaithfulness, or the perversity of the unfaithful. Those are in contrast. But the integrity of the upright will guide them. A good guide for life is a person who is living an upright life. To be upright is to be a person of integrity. And so the point is that such a person will have his integrity for his guide as he approaches day-to-day decisions, and maybe even pressured decisions from maybe a workplace, maybe other places, that they have that as their guide, their integrity, is their compass, so to speak, that keeps them on track. And so integrity will cause him to make the right choices, to go in the right direction when we come to those crossroads in life. In contrast to that, the one who lacks integrity, the one who is crooked, who is dishonest, who is hypocritical, will be led to ruin. They'll choose the wrong path more times than not. And so the two sides of the proverb are straightness in place of crookedness, or sincerity in place of hypocrisy, or principle in place of advantage, consistency in place of compromise, honor in place of infidelity, virtue in place of weakness. And so as we consider the idea of integrity, we see, first of all, a single purpose. A single purpose. Our English word integrity actually comes from the mathematical term integer. And an integer is a complete or a single number. It's a number that's not divided. A number that can be written without a fractional component. So the number 25 is an integer. 25.5 is not an integer. That's a number that's divided. And so any number, any whole number, we might say, would be an integer. Well, that's the meaning of the word. And so the moral implication, when we come to integrity then, is a person of integrity has a single purpose. They're not divided and trying to go a couple of different directions at the same time. His principles aren't divided. His loyalties are not shared among various things. Kind of brings to mind Jesus' words in Matthew 6, verse 24. No one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one, despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. You cannot be divided. You have to have a single purpose. The person of integrity's course is steady. He's not double-minded. He's not unstable in all of his ways. James chapter 1, verse 8. Because it determines the single course of always doing right, integrity signifies honesty, sincerity, honorableness, sound moral principles, fairness, uprightness, goodness. You know, those are words that we could use along with that. The Old Testament word that is translated integrity is the word tumah. And it includes the idea of completeness. In fact, it is translated more times than not by the word complete, as opposed to integrity. But it has that idea of completeness or simplicity. Again, something that is not divided, something that is whole in and of itself. So, moral and spiritual simplicity. Not complicated by either by circumstances, by enticements, by pressure from the outside. Those aren't what determine what we do. It's the integrity that we have. The integrity of the upright will guide them. You know, inner debates over choices of right and wrong are settled in advance. You know, we're not having to make that individual choice to every circumstance because our integrity is already, we already know where we're going to stand. And then when the different circumstances come, they just kind of bounce off. The commentator Matthew Henry said, commenting on this upright man that's in the text here, he says his principles are fixed, his rule is certain, and therefore his way is plain, his sincerity keeps him steady. So again, it's already decided. The course is already set. And you're not going to waver from that. You know, you might have a man who claims to be a man of great integrity. And he finds himself in a situation where he's asked to lie to help to close a business deal. It's a big business deal. He's going to get a big commission check out of it. It's going to be great for the business and so forth. But he refuses. Well, somebody says, we'll give you $1,000 if you'll do this, in addition to your commission or whatever. Certainly not. I wouldn't do that. That wouldn't be right. Well, what if we give you $10,000? The answer is still no. What if we give you $100,000? We'll set you up for life. But let me think about it. Well, if we give you a couple hundred thousand, well, I don't have to think about it anymore. Is that really a person of integrity? Did he ever really have any integrity? if he was swayed by the circumstance and by what he could get out of it. See, integrity that wavers as the stakes are raised is not integrity at all. It's a pseudo-integrity. An integrity as long as the stakes are not very high. Jesus said in Luke chapter 16, verse 10, "He who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much, and he who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much." Now we might think almost the opposite of that. He who is, you know, whenever the stakes get higher, you know, then that same person. But either way you look at it, the principle's the same. A person should have the same integrity, whether it's talking about a very small thing or a very big thing. A person is who they are outside of the circumstances. In contrast to the example we just looked at, there's an incident recorded by Earl West in the book The Search of the Ancient Order, which is kind of the history of the Restoration Movement. And he talks about the old pioneer preacher, Raccoon John Smith. If you've ever have an opportunity, if you're not familiar with him, go back and read some of those old stories, not just about him, but about some of those old pioneer preachers and what they went through and so forth. Very interesting reading. But the story of Raccoon John Smith, he bought a farm in Kentucky. And when he bought that farm, a lot of his friends advised him not to preach as strongly as he had in the past. Not to stand up for godly principles as he had before, because if he does, he'll make people angry. And as a consequence, they'll quit paying him. And as a consequence, he'll lose his farm. That's the advice that was given. Smith replied, "Consciousness is an article that I have never brought to the market. But should I offer it for sale, Montgomery County, with all its lands and houses, would not be enough to buy it, much less that farm of 100 acres. Smith said, that farm of 100 acres is not worth sacrificing my integrity. My conscience would not allow me to do that. Integrity never negotiates its principles. It stands solid no matter what the circumstances around about might be. Well, Jesus warned of the hypocrisy that tries to focus in two different directions. Not just in the passage we read a moment ago about the two masters, but several times throughout the Sermon on the Mount, especially Matthew chapter 6, he talks about the two aims, the two directions. You had the religious leaders who were doing things supposed for the religious purpose, but also to be seen by men. Things such as the giving of alms. Even the way they said their prayers, standing on a street corner and wanting everybody to look and see how wonderful they were. Fasting, he refers to. They'd disfigure their face and look all forlorn as they fasted, again, to please men. And so when they did these things to please men, there's a divided purpose. It's not just about God and His purpose. There's not the singleness of purpose that's demanded by integrity. And that's why Jesus advised you do these things in private. It's the thing between you and God. Don't be doing it to be seen by men and to be getting the praise of men. He even talks about the treasuries of laying up things in heaven as opposed to here on earth. And the things to do with that, Matthew 6, verses 19 through 21. He urges a single eye. That we have a single eye, an eye that looks only toward pleasing God. Matthew 6, verse 22, the King James Version says, "The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light." I read from the King James because it uses that word single. Some of the other versions, the New King James, we normally use the word good, the eye be good, honest, the ESV, or I'm sorry, healthy, clear, the American Standard. But a good eye, a healthy eye, one that's single of purpose. It has its focus. Its focus isn't divided all over the place, but it's focused in a single point as it ought to be. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 25 and 26 says, "Let your eyes look straight ahead, and your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path of your feet, and let all your ways be established." The integrity that guides us, the upright, has its eyes focused only on pleasing God, only on what is right, only what is the right thing to do. You know, whether I'm going to get rich doing the right thing or it's going to leave me a pauper, whatever the circumstance, I'm going to do what's right. The word that's translated again, integrity, is found 19 times in the New King James Version. It's only found once in the New Testament. And if you look at the King James or the American Standard, it's not found a single time in the New Testament. The one time that it is found in the New King James is in Titus chapter 2, verses 6 through 8, specifically verse 7. It says, "Likewise, exhort the young men to be sober-minded in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you." So in doctrine, showing integrity. The original King James says uncorruptness there. It takes the opposite of integrity and then puts the negative in front of it. Uncorruptness. In doctrine, showing uncorruptness. Integrity. There are a couple times in the addition to that, the NIV translates integrity. That's Matthew chapter 22, verse 16, and Mark chapter 12, verse 14, which are actually the same event recorded in those two accounts of the gospel. And that those say, they sent their disciples to him being Jesus, along with the Herodians. "Teachers," they said, "we know that you are a man of integrity," the NIV has it, "and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are." And again, you have integrity there in the NIV. The New King James says that you are true. We know that you are true. The New American Standard says you are truthful. But you really have the definition of integrity in the last sentence there in that verse. "You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are." There's integrity. There's being a man of truth, of truthfulness. Well, even though the word integrity only appears from 0 to 3 times in the New Testament, depending on the translation you're using, certainly the concept is there. In fact, it's a concept that's essential of Christian character, that we be people of integrity. We see that in passages like 1 Corinthians 15:13, where we have the exhortation to watch. Stand fast in the faith. Be brave. Be strong. Stand fast in the faith. There, no matter what's coming at you, you stand fast in the faith. That's the idea of integrity. I'm not going to swerve. I'm not going to move my eyes away from the focus. Paul indicated integrity when he said in Acts 24:16, "This being so, I myself always strive to have a conscience without offense toward God and men." How do you have a conscience without offense? You live a life of integrity. You live a life of single-eyedness where you're focused on what you're supposed to be. Hebrews 13, verse 18, the Hebrew writer wrote of willingness in all things to live honorably. Same idea again. To live a life of integrity. To live honorably. Well, character. Part of, you know, we might could almost sum it up with that word. Character, a person of character. And that's the summation of life's choices that come together to make our character. You are what you are. And who you are because of the directions of the choices you've made. You made a choice to be here this morning. And again, as we said earlier, hopefully that's not a choice you have to get up and make and struggle with every Sunday, but a choice that was made long ago, and now you just act upon that choice that you've made. But integrity means having principles by which decisions are made and having the fortitude then to stick with those principles, even, again, as times get tough. Biblical integrity means accepting as absolute the moral and spiritual directive of God's Word. That's the standard underneath our principles that our principles are built upon. And then again, the determination to follow those, come what may. That God's Word, God's will, God's authority is the foundation of integrity is illustrated in the Lord's instruction to Solomon. Back in 1 Kings chapter 9, verses 4 and 5. He says, "Now if you walk before me as your father David walked, in integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do according to all that I have commanded you, and if you keep my statutes and my judgments, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom over Israel forever, as I promised David your father." So the Lord is telling Solomon, if you walk like your father David in integrity of heart and in uprightness. That's the way David walked. Solomon, you need to walk the same way. David was known as a man after God's own heart. Solomon, you need to be that same way. You know, we think of Job. Job is best known for his patience. In fact, his patience is referred to in James chapter 5, verse 11. But it was his integrity that made him endure. That caused him to keep on keeping on, to keep on doing what was right in spite of the things that were being done to him, you might say. You know, Satan tested him with the loss of family and possessions. But God said of Job, as Satan comes back the second time in Job chapter 2, and God says Job still holds fast to his integrity. Satan, you've gave him your best shot, but he still holds to his integrity. Satan's then given a little more authority. Okay, now you can touch his body. You just can't take his life. He's still going to hold his integrity. In fact, his wife wanted him to curse God, but she knew that he wouldn't do that as long as he retained his integrity. Because she gives him the advice in chapter 2, verse 9, after the body has now been afflicted, it says, "Then his wife said to him, 'Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die.'" She acknowledged the fact Job's got to get rid of his integrity before he's going to curse God and die. Job just dropped this thing of integrity. And then you can curse God and die. Then you can bring an end, at least, to this. You know, we're especially impressed with how he held to his convictions, even when his friends came. And they kind of all gang up against him with every moral and theological argument that they could muster, accusing him of some type of sin that he must have been guilty of for these things to have come about. You know, sometimes the greatest threat to integrity comes from the persuasiveness of others. And sometimes even people close to us, such as friends or family, such as Job's own wife. The majority view, even sometimes, that stands against us. There's a professor one time that did an experiment. He did it several times, several different class settings. He would draw four lines on the chalkboard. I guess this is an old illustration because we still had chalkboards. But he would draw four lines on the chalkboard. He would label one X, and then he would have A, B, and C. And he would ask the class to pick the line that was the same length as X. So you had X and then A, B, C. Which one of those is the same length as X? But the trick was that everybody in the class, except one student, had been told ahead of time to say the wrong answer. All given the same wrong answer. An answer that was obviously wrong. Obviously much shorter or longer than X. Obviously the wrong answer. But yet they all give that answer. You know what happened in every case? Every time that he tried that experiment, the case was always the same. that the one student would be persuaded to switch to the majority answer, even though it was obviously not correct. Peer pressure has a lot of pressure on us sometimes. But not so with Job. In fact, in chapter 27, verse 5, Job says, after he's gone through all of this, these friends have made all of their speeches accusing him of all kinds of things, and he says, "Far be it from me that I should say you are right. Till I die, I will not put my integrity from me." See, what they were saying was false. For him to have said, "Yeah, I guess you're right," that would have been a sellout, just the same as the examples we looked at earlier. Job was right. He's standing. I'm not going to put away my integrity, the truthfulness of where I stand. Well, I don't think it comes as any great surprise that integrity is rare and becoming more and more rare. It seems, you know, so scarce in politics that hypocrisy is often assumed before it's even uncovered. You know, we just assume if somebody's a politician, they're crooked, don't we? You know, it's like you, if you're a politician, you have to prove you're not crooked, that you're not crooked, not that you are. Because that's just the assumption that's made. But it's not just politicians and law. You know, sometimes we put lawyers in that same category. But what about cheating in school? Cheating in marriage? Shoddy workmanship? Not giving your employer a full day's work for a full day's pay? Failure to pay debts? You know, one thing that you hear quite often as preachers move around from place to place is that a new preacher comes in and they go in, as they begin to go out in the town, it's a very well-known fact that the preacher before didn't pay his debts. And it's almost assumed, here comes another preacher, we have to watch out for that guy. You know how sad that is. Padding the expense reports, if you work on an expense report. Broken promises. Tax fraud. You know, the list can go on and on and on of places where our integrity is tested. Things that may not seem as big as some of the obvious things, but yet they're still tests of integrity. Will Rogers said about tax fraud, he said the income tax has made more liars out of the American people than golf has. Well, I don't play golf, but I guess it makes people liars too. But, you know, moral compromise is the order of the day, isn't it? It's like, unfortunately, when you ask people out in the world, you just almost assume that what they're telling you may not be true, because we've all been burned so many times. Much of the culture of today doesn't really leave any room for biblical integrity. It's an oddity. One survey reported that of 3,000 businessmen that responded to this particular survey, 70% of them said that they were expected, at least occasionally, to compromise their principles to conform to their company's or their boss's standards. 70%. Jerry White, in a book that he wrote, Honesty, Morality, and Conscience, said, moreover, they ranked reputation. He's actually the one that cited the study. And he said, moreover, they ranked reputation for firm, moral, and or ethical conviction at the bottom of the list of factors considering in awarding promotions. You know, so that reputation, evidently not something that's real prized by the business world. In fact, may get in the way. He goes on and he writes some experience that he had while he was an instructor at the United States Air Force Academy. And the Academy's honor code said, I will not lie, cheat, or steal, nor tolerate those who do. Well, during the time that he was on the faculty there, and there was some code violations came to light. And a lot of scandal, a lot of publicity that came along with it. But as those things came out, he was very interested at the protest. And the protests that were launched were against the moral code itself, not over the lack of integrity of the people who broke the code. He said that such protests reflect our social attitudes, that the attitude is that integrity is not as important as just getting along with people and doing what everybody else is doing. And then as he kind of brought all of what he had found to a climax, he said this. He said, the problems arose because we have attempted to impose a Christian ethic on an essentially non-Christian society. And unfortunately, that's true, isn't it? We've become a society that really doesn't think that much about Christian things, such as integrity. But people of integrity. You know, we would expect the world to be kind of where the world is. That's what the world does. That's what the world has always done. But what about Christians? You know, among Christian people, integrity certainly ought to be the rule and not the exception. Hopefully, when we ask a Christian, we can know they're telling us the truth. That we can know that they're going to react in the right way. You know, the oft-repeated charge that's made, well, there's hypocrites in the church. And sometimes that's founded, sometimes it's not. But the fact that that accusation is even made is evidence that Christians are expected to walk to a higher standard. You know, people don't say, well, I don't go to the football game because there's hypocrites at the football game. You know, why? Because you're expecting Christians to be a little higher. And that's a good thing. We certainly should be a little bit higher. Romans chapter 12, verse 2, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed. We're not supposed to be like the world around about us. We're supposed to be transformed. We're supposed to be different. Well, how can we do that? How do we develop and maintain integrity? And we'll close with this list. This is a list. I have an article that I ran across as I was researching for this lesson. But this particular author recommended these things. He said, develop a deep personal honesty through self-confrontation. A person of integrity doesn't make excuses. A person of integrity isn't always looking to blame others for their shortcomings. But a person of deep personal honesty. Again, that's a rarity, isn't it? People that start out with that as a foundation. And then they said, develop the proper moral standards. You know, none of these are rocket science. God is the source of morality, and so if we're developing proper moral standards, we're developing moral standards that are based on His character that we get through His revealed Word. And then thirdly, he says, God's standards must become our standards. His values become our standards. We learn to love as He loved, to hate what He hates. And then he says, learn the fear of the Lord. That healthy respect for God. And who am I going to honor in my action? And am I going to honor my boss at work? Am I going to honor somebody out in the world that's trying to get me to do something that I shouldn't do? Or am I going to honor the Lord? Do I have that fear of Him, that respect for Him? That I'm going to do what's right. The fear of the Lord teaches us to love what's good and hate what's evil. Romans chapter 12, verse 13. God's Word must be effectively assimilated into our heart, into our mind, into our conscience, into who we are, so that it will influence our thoughts, our words, our actions, our attitudes. Again, and we can be prepared and ready. How am I going to react when that particular situation comes? And then he suggests, develop genuine humility. That one kind of surprises me on the list. But being humble enough. You know, it takes courage, certainly, to stand for what's right, but it also takes some humility. We're not pretending to be someone that we're not. A humble person is a person who's realistic, who's teachable. And then we must learn the wisdom of being personally accountable. Again, not looking to excuse, not looking to lay the blame off on someone else, but that personal accountability. And oftentimes accountability to others is a very helpful thing. To have someone that we can answer to in a sense. Someone that checks on us. Hey, how are you doing this week? You know, some things I'm struggling with. How'd you do with those? You know, and bounce those things off of each other. And if you know you're going to have to tell somebody what you did sometime, that's a big help. Integrity must be founded on biblical principles. And integrity should always be our guide. That conscience, that integrity that is built upon God's standards. You know, if we just take a little walk down through some of the Proverbs and the Psalms, others may choose the path of crookedness, the broad way that leads to destruction. But as for me, I will walk in my integrity. Psalm 26:11. Earthly wealth may be offered through compromise. But better is the poor who walks in his integrity than one who is perverse in his lips and is a fool. Proverbs 19, verse 1. Some may be satisfied with only a pretense of religion, but the religious man walks in his integrity. Proverbs 20, verse 7. Those who are crooked and insincere seek security in their own devices. But David said, "Let integrity and uprightness preserve me, for I'll wait for you." Psalm 25:21. Passing years and winds of change do not provoke eternal principles. So as Job said, "Till I die, I will not put away my integrity from me." Job 27:5. So let us so live that we can pray like the psalmist, "Judge me, O Lord, according to my righteousness and according to my integrity within me." Lesson is yours. I hope it's given you some things to ponder through this week, that we will certainly be people of integrity, people that the Lord knows He can depend on as He did on Job, and that the people around about us know they can depend on to do what's right and to stand up for godly things. If you're here this morning and need to respond to the Lord's invitation to put on your Lord in baptism, all is prepared and ready. We can do that if you indicate that need at this time based upon your belief, your repentance, your confession. Maybe you need the prayers of your brothers and sisters, or if we can assist you in any way this morning, if you'd let your need be known as we stand and sing.